HPPodcraft.com.
The 12 years, continued Mrs. Dean, following that dismal period were the happiest of my life. My greatest troubles in their passage rose from our little lady's trifling illnesses, which she had to experience in common with all children, rich and poor. For the rest, after the first 6 months, she grew like a larch and could walk and talk too, in her own way, before the heath blossomed a second time over Mrs. Linton's dust. She was the most winning thing that ever brought sunshine into a desolate house. A real beauty in face, with the Earnshaw's handsome dark eyes, but the Linton's fair skin and small features, and yellow curling hair. Her spirit was high, though not rough, and qualified by a heart sensitive and lively to excess in its affections. That capacity for intense attachments reminded me of her mother. Still, she did not resemble her, for she could be soft and mild as a dove, and she had a gentle voice and pensive expression. Her anger was never furious, her love never fierce. It was deep and tender. However, it must be acknowledged she had faults to foil her gifts. A propensity to be saucy was one, and a perverse will that indulged children invariably acquire, whether they be good-tempered or cross. If a servant chanced to vex her, it was always, "I shall tell Papa," and if he reproved her, even by a look, you would have thought it a heartbreaking business. I don't believe he ever did speak a harsh word to her. He took her education entirely on himself and made it an amusement. Fortunately, curiosity and a quick intellect made her an apt scholar. She learned rapidly and eagerly and did honour to his teaching.
And just when I thought we were done with this, Catherine, I keep trying to get out. And they keep pulling me back in.
This Catherine, the younger Catherine, she's described in that passage that we just heard as growing like a larch. And so we can imagine that she has a bizarre coniferous shape, almost like the Zippahoos or one of the elder things.
Ooh, yes.
And that makes a lot of sense because this is a popular work of weird fiction.
It is. It is called Emily Bronte's What the Ring Hides Heathcliff. It's me, it's Kathy, I've come home. I'm so cold, let me into your window.
We haven't talked much about the song on the show, but I've never been a fan of that.
What?
I do like it when you sing it, however. And partly it's because I heard it when I was a lot younger and I don't really have it in my head. In fact, the person I've heard it sing it the most over the years is you. And the thing is, when you break into it, because I don't have the tune in my head. I definitely do now because we've been covering the book. But the last few times you busted into it, I don't remember what the song sounds like. So you just sound crazy. You just start going, what the ring? What? I love it.
It does sound crazy. So yeah, but that's why it's awesome. It's freaking.
Well, I know it's a Kate Bush original that she wrote when she was very young, right?
18. She was 18 years old when she wrote that song.
And then there's a good cover of it by Pat Benatar.
What? Really?
But I think I like your version the best.
Oh, thanks.
But hey, why are we talking about the book Wuthering Heights?
Oh, well, H.P. Lovecraft, he liked this story a lot. He thought it had a very strong, weird element, especially for being Gothic literature. So that's why we're going to talk about it here on the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast.
And who was laying down that sweet text at the top?
That was none other than our atmospheric and brooding reader, Rachel Lackey.
Boom.
She once again gives us that authentic Yorkshire feeling that we've come to know and love. Thank you.
Thank you, Rachel. And thanks to our listeners for putting up with the slight delay in our Wuthering Heights coverage. Yes. We're going to catch up on that pretty quick. Have our final show on the book out within the week. So you'll get two within the week. But hopefully you enjoyed the reading of Pickman's Model that we released.
Yes.
In lieu of a show last week. That was, of course, brought to you by the backers of last year's Kickstarter and was read by the delightful Greg Johnson.
I love his performance. I listened to it when it went up again because I haven't listened to it in a while and I forgot how much I loved it. It's great.
Well, he brings a lot of character to it that mostly when people read these stories, because they're horror stories, they kind of ominously tone them out.
Yeah.
And I thought Greg portrayed this narrator as the sort of fussy, very nervous
Yeah.
Narrator, and it was a different way to hear the story. I mean, it really felt like a first-hand account this time, as opposed to how others have done it. So I think ours is the best reading.
I do, too.
Thank you, Greg, for doing that. Some other products from that Kickstarter that we'll be sprinkling into our show schedule this year. We have a reading of The Statement of Randolph Carter by Andrew Lehman.
Yes.
Backers have already heard that one. It's
phenomenal.
It's fantastic, and that's going to be coming out at some point. We've also got a reading of The Yellow Wallpaper by Heather Klinke. We're almost done with that one. We've been working on it. And, of course, we've got a full 90-minute recording of our live show in Chicago. So all that stuff will come out this year. Of course, we want to thank you, our subscribers, for keeping the whole show going. We're going to have more great stories to cover for you. Now, I have to say that when I was at the halfway point of Wuthering Heights, which is about where we are now, I really wouldn't have minded if somebody had jumped in and read me Pickman's Model or anything other than the book, because as we've said, reading it was a real slog. But
it was a chore.
At least at this point, we've gotten rid of Catherine.
Well,
the elder.
Yes, that's right. Where we left off, old Catherine is dead. Long live young Catherine.
That's right, young Catherine, the bizarre spawn of woman and larch. Yet, as it says, she's pretty in the face.
She's pretty in the face, but you should see her neck. It's horrific.
Yeah.
After little Cat was born, Nellie had 12 years of happiness taking care of her.
Mm-hmm.
She loved her like crazy. She thought she was the absolute best. At this point in her narration, Nellie's narration, she's 13. She's smart and pretty, but a bit pig-headed and temperamental. Her father, Edgar, doesn't let her leave the Grange ever. No going anywhere, especially near Wuthering Heights. So as she grows up, she knows nothing of Heathcliff or Hareton or Wuthering Heights.
And this is really primitive and messed up to me. Now, I know Edgar's been one of the nicer characters in the whole book.
That's not saying much, by the way.
Yeah, right. But okay, so he doesn't want her to go to Wuthering Heights, but he doesn't just restrict her from that. She's not even going to town. She's 13 and she probably only knows how many people?
Yeah.
She only knows the servants.
Yeah.
Her dad.
That's it.
You're really dooming this kid to have lifelong social issues.
Yeah.
If she ever does leave there, she's in a lot of trouble. What he's doing to her is terrible.
It's horrible. And it might explain a few things.
Mm-hmm.
She wants to go to Fairy Caves of Penistone Crags.
Yeah.
Which is not a real place around here, but probably inspired by this place in Haworth called Pondin Kirk, which is a big cliff where there's a little cave at the bottom of it.
And she wants to go see those things because it's also sort of the edge of the world to her.
Yeah.
I think she wrongfully thinks the sea might be right beyond there or something. So her conception of the world is just so messed up.
Yeah.
It's just here on this estate.
Edgar, he gets word that his sister Isabella is dying. He booted her out of the house because she married Heathcliff, which she immediately regretted.
Right.
But since she's dying, Edgar runs off to London to see her, take care of his nephew, Linton, who is Heathcliff's son. You know, this is something I was thinking about since this is kind of the last mention we have of Isabella. Is there an implication that Heathcliff raped her?
You mean how the heck did she end up with a baby from him?
Yeah, because he pretty much treats her like dirt immediately, like on the way to Wuthering Heights. And then right in the door, he is awful to her. So the fact that she would have sex with him voluntarily seems kind of nuts to me.
It does. I thought about that too as well. And it is possible that that happened before they got married. One option.
Yeah.
So when he was still playing along and being nice. Or she submitted because she thought maybe it was just her duty.
And another thing, I think at the time, I think it was impossible for, like legally speaking, for a husband to rape his wife.
I think that's probably the case, yeah.
As much as it would have been rape by our standards, maybe in that period of time, even to Emily Bronte, to her it wasn't.
Right.
Now, back at the Grange, her dad's gone, and little Cat, she gets out. She escapes.
She pulls this little child Lovecraft move. She said, she was that day an Arabian merchant going to cross the desert with his caravan. Totally sounds like something
it does.
Lovecraft would have been imagining. So Nellie gets tricked. She gives her plenty of provisions for herself based in this fantasy. You know, she needs a horse and three camels and a large hound and a couple of pointers. She does her best to supply her with things. And then she trots off with a merry laugh, mocking her cautious counsel to avoid galloping and come back early. The naughty thing never made her appearance at tea. So she was out there to the edge of the world to see what the heck was up.
So she goes towards the crags, but ends up near Wuthering Heights. There she meets Hareton, her first cousin, by the way, just to point that out. She is totally into his manly ways.
Right.
He's strapping, man.
Yeah, he's 18 years old now.
Yeah.
It's one of these staples of romance stories, and this goes for both genders. He's that character who's an innocent that doesn't know his own beauty.
Yeah.
He's definitely not innocent, but
no.
Meaning not worldly. He wouldn't know that he's a good-looking guy because he hasn't been out in the world for people to tell him that. And that's such a coveted character in romance stories. Oh my gosh, she's so hot, but she has no idea.
Which translation is, I'm such an ugly mess. I actually have a chance at getting this person because they don't know how good looking they are and that they could do much better than me.
Right. And the other implication is also that their nature wouldn't have been corrupted by the appreciation of their beauty.
Right. Kitty Cat and Harridan have this encounter. Nellie finds them and tries to get Cat back to the Grange, but she's not having it.
Catherine doesn't want to leave. She's sitting there enjoying herself by the fire. And she also doesn't understand who everybody is. There's a servant there. There's also Harriton. She's trying to figure, like, Harriton, she thinks that he might be a servant for somebody else, so she's telling him to get her things. And he's been standing there awkwardly, not even knowing what to make of her speech or style of speech or anything like that. But he gets mad when she starts ordering him around. He calls her a saucy witch, which is pretty... Woo! And she's also ordering the servant around, and that servant's saying, hey, I don't serve you. But Kat is of that tiny world. She doesn't understand that everybody's not her servant.
Because pretty much everybody she knows is her servant.
Just such a weird way to view the world.
Nellie tells Kat that Harriton is not the son of the master of Wuthering Heights. He's her cousin. Mm-hmm. Kat's like, my cousin lives in London. My dad's going down to get him right now. Duh. And Nellie's like, dumbass, you have more than one cousin. It's possible to have more than one cousin. So Nellie gets Kat to leave and also not to say anything to her father about her expedition that day because he would straight up fire her.
Right. He's been trying to stop this from happening. And there was some important info about Harriton in here.
A well-made athletic youth, good-looking in features and stout and healthy, but attired in garments befitting his daily occupations of working on the farm and lounging among the moors after rabbits and game. Still, I thought I could detect in his physiognomy a mind owning better qualities than his father ever possessed. Good things lost amid a wilderness of weeds, to be sure, whose rankness far overtopped their neglected growth. Yet, notwithstanding, evidence of a wealthy soil that might yield luxuriant crops under other and favorable circumstances.
And this is similar to earlier descriptions of Catherine, like what we heard at the beginning. She has a capacity for intense attachments like her mother, but her nature is mild.
Yeah.
And I think that it's somewhat clear that here in the next generation, you would think Heathcliff's son would be the Heathcliff, but it's not. It's Harriton.
Yeah.
A person who's been mistreated that young Catherine may form a strong bond with. Yet in their case, the interesting thing is by the end of this book, the love between those two, it brings him higher. Whereas in the former generation, the love between Heathcliff and Catherine is what drove him to become a cruel, awful person. So, you know, love functions differently between the two generations. And I think a lot of that has to do with the nature of the children. As I was reading this, I was thinking, what are the implications for nature versus nurture? Because between the two boys in this new generation, you have almost a trading places kind of situation. You know, Heathcliff has a son. We're about to meet him, Linton. And he was raised in London by his mother. It might have been pretty rough for him being a city kid, kind of how Heathcliff was when he was found, but he certainly wasn't an orphan. Undoubtedly, his mother loved him and took care of him. Harriton gets the same treatment that Heathcliff did. He's abused for his whole life, made a farmhand. Definitely worse for Harriton than it was for Linton.
Yeah.
But he's able to overcome circumstances and change despite what was done to him, while Heathcliff's actual son, who had things going well for him, can't avoid his cruelty and his manipulative nature. So that must have been inherited from his father. Whereas Harriton's nature is able to overcome his treatment. And it kind of speaks to, it doesn't really matter what the treatment is, it's all in your nature. I think this book kind of comes down on the side of nature versus nurture.
Yeah.
You can't avoid the you know, Heathcliff's seed is what makes his son so awful.
Well, I think a lot of his problems also come out of his physical weakness.
Right.
And him trying to compensate for his, Linton, talking about Linton, who we haven't got to yet in the story, is he's constantly ill or weak. And eventually he dies because he's just so frail. And it feels like that his impotence really turns him mean.
Sure. Although I kind of feel, well, you know, we introduce this character in the next chapter. And at first you feel bad for him because of those weaknesses.
Oh, he's horrible.
But over time, you start to think, is he making this worse because of his nature? I mean, he really is a complaining. It seems like half of it's fake. Did he put himself in this boat because the only way he relates to people is by being a whiny jerk?
But I feel like he is very different than Heathcliff. Heathcliff is not the kind of character that ever complained or whined about anything. His ill treatment was always just taken quietly, and he would use that hatred that was built up to do things later on, whereas Linton is just a whiny baby.
Well, they're awful in different ways.
They are.
Isabella passes away.
And Edgar brings Linton back to the Grange.
Linton's only 6 months younger than Catherine, and of course she's pretty excited because she's never had anybody her age around because, as we said, her father won't let her go out in the world. I was thinking of her like the character in Room or the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, like one of these girls who gets kidnapped. You know, this is what the world around you is. They tell them all this misinformation. But so he shows up to meet Catherine.
And Catherine is bummed because he is just pale and weak and a whiny baby.
Hey, he just had a long trip. He's lost his mother. Take it easy on him. But right away, you start going, oh, this kid. They take him up to the library. It says, I proceeded to remove Linton's cap and mantle and placed him on a chair by the table. But he was no sooner seated than he began to cry afresh. My master inquired what was the matter. I can't sit on a chair, sobbed the boy. I mean, can you imagine? That's some next level whining. And they take him to the sofa and get him some tea. And then Kathy treats him like a little baby. She commenced stroking his curls, kissing his cheek, and offering him tea in her saucer like a baby. This pleased him, for he was not much better. He dried his eyes and lightened into a faint smile. He's pathologically needs to be cared for by everybody.
Yeah, he is awful. Don't get me wrong, but he just seems like the anti-Heathcliff.
Well, it's certainly not the son that Heathcliff would have wanted. And we know that because pretty soon, kid's going to have to go over and meet his dad, right?
Yeah. So soon, Joseph shows up and he says that he's there for Heathcliff's son. And Edgar can't really deny him because it is his son.
Yeah.
So Edgar says he'll bring him to Wuthering Heights the next day. Gets us into chapter 20. Nellie's the one who has to take Linton to Wuthering Heights, and he's scared about going. So on the way, she totally lies to him about how awesome Heathcliff is. Like, he gives ice cream all the time to all the kids, and he'll let you stay up as late as you want, and he's got a Pac-Man machine in the house, and you can play for free as much as you want.
He's got a little train you can ride around through Wuthering Heights. Bubbles the Chimp lives there. It's amazing.
It's awesome.
Yeah, Linton is a little weirded out, rightly so, that he's actually never heard of his dad before.
Yeah.
And he says to Nellie, how am I to love Papa? I don't know him. And she says, oh, all children love their parents, which is hilarious. Why would she say that? And she says, your mother perhaps thought you would want to be with him if she mentioned him often to you. So she was sparing you? Like, the stuff these adults are doing to these kids, it's like they don't stand a chance.
Yeah.
And I did feel bad for him at this point still.
Well, I think Nellie's being a total chicken shit here.
She is. She's making it easier for herself.
For herself. When they show up, Heathcliff is not only serving cold lunch, it is a flippin' Lunchable 2 months out of date.
The coldest of lunches.
He asked Linton if he knows who he is, and the kid's like, no, I've never heard anything about you. So Heathcliff, he says this, your mother was a wicked slut to leave you in ignorance of the sort of father you possessed. No, don't whine or color up, though it is something to see you have not white blood. Be a good lad and I'll do for you.
Mm-hmm.
And man, and then he says about Linton, I despise him for himself and hate him for the memories he revives. You really don't want to hear your dad saying that kind of stuff.
That's Tywin Lannister kind of stuff to lay on. Lay on your kids. No, and you know, I mentioned previously the Mallory Ortberg article, Every Meal in Wuthering Heights, ranked in order of sadness.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And maybe my favorite entry comes from this chapter. The heading is just, neither of these things are food, though. The quote is, don't mention his mother to me, said the master angrily. Get him something that he can eat, that's all. What is his usual food, Nellie? I suggested boiled milk or tea. And the housekeeper received instructions to prepare some. And I thought the same thing when I read that. That's not food, Nellie.
Oh, boy. Well, it's tough out on the moors, man. You got to.
I know.
Anything that is edible, I think, is pretty much considered food.
It's all food. I'm breathing in some sweet food.
So Heathcliff kind of lays out his plan. Yeah, he just says he wants Linton to be the master of both estates. Right. The kid pleads with Nellie to take him back to the Grange, but no, she just leaves him behind.
Yeah.
I was reading this essay about the duality of this book, Heathcliff versus Edgar, Thrushcross Grange versus Wuthering Heights, Earnshaw's versus Linton's, love versus hate. It's also divided into two parts, the first part being the first generation with Heathcliff, and the second part is the following generation. The first part of the book is about the descent of the family.
Right.
The second part of the book is all about hope and things getting better.
Mm-hmm.
And the middle point of the book being Catherine's death and Little Cat's birth. The second half isn't as emotional or passionate, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, there's not as much. I mean, there's tons of crazy stuff that happens. But it's mostly Heathcliff is the crazy guy in this thing.
Yeah, he's the bad guy in the second half. And it's really about these characters trying to overcome the errors of their forebears, you know, to try and get out of the cages that they've been placed in by what's come before in the first half of the book. So
the essay goes on and says that the lessening of this passion is sort of needed for the final calm that happens at the end of the book, because things just kind of work out. I mean, it's not like a party, you know, there's not like a big dance number at the end of the book. It's just things are okay. A big part of the second half of the book is Heathcliff's scheming. Since he was married to Isabella, he has claim over the land if anything happened to Edgar. Mm-hmm. And Edgar knows this and is doing everything he can not to let that happen. Right. But as the second generation gets older, we see their parents in them, as well as the influence of Heathcliff. So Hareton really does turn out to be a young Heathcliff, just right. way less mean.
Far less mean.
Yeah. He's a little bit mean, but he's regretful for a lot of the things that he does.
It's a meanness that was pushed upon him. Yeah. It's not in his nature.
Chapter 21, Kitty is bummed out about her cousin leaving because she was just jazzed to have somebody her own age around. Mm-hmm. Nellie keeps up with gossip and Heathcliff just hates this kid. He treats Lytton like dirt because he's frail and sickly. And of course, Heathcliff wants him to be a badass.
And the descriptions of Lytton don't make him sound very likable. He whines about everything, pretty much just sits up in his room wrapped in fur, drinking everybody's milk. He's always got to have milk. Even in the winter when they have a shortage of milk, he doesn't care about anybody else. Give me the milk.
So we jump ahead a bit. Catherine's 16 and she and Nellie are out bird hunting.
Yeah, they have to find something to do. It's actually her 16th birthday, but that's also the anniversary of her mother's death. So Dad gets all gloomy. So she's always had to spend her birthdays without him.
Now, Nellie loses her for a bit and then finds her talking with Heathcliff and Hareton. Mm-hmm. They just happen to be out and about, I guess. She kind of remembers Hareton from before when she ran out.
Catherine, yeah.
Yeah, Catherine does. And asks if he's Heathcliff's son. And he says no. But his son is at home. She and Nellie should come see him. And Nellie's like, no way, Jose. But Kitty Cat really wants to check out this new boy. Mm-hmm. She doesn't know that it's Lynton.
Right.
And I don't know why Nellie doesn't say anything. I guess she's just afraid of Heathcliff.
She argues with him, but he's unsuccessful. He's also strong-arming her a lot of the time.
Yeah, he's literally strong-arming her.
He's using his strong arm to keep her in one place. And he even lays out his evil plan. I want these two to meet so they can get married.
Yeah.
And she says, yeah, but if that happens and Lytton dies, which we're all expecting, then Kathy's going to get everything. So ha ha. And he goes, no, that's not the way it's laid out in the will. Everything will go to me.
So Kit Kat and Lytton don't recognize each other when they finally meet first. Heathcliff says he hoped they would be married someday. He just puts that right on the table.
Puts it right out there. He wants to get it in their head.
Lytton is really sickly and doesn't have the goods to really show her around Wuthering Heights, so Hareton does. Catherine is a jerk, and she makes fun of Hareton because he is illiterate.
Right, he can't read the words on the crest over Wuthering Heights.
Heathcliff then realizes that she's out there with Hareton, and he's like, hey, you Lytton, get that your ass out of bed and go out there, because that guy's totally way hotter than you, and it's going to ruin my plan.
That was the dialogue in the book, I remember. Get out there, he said. That guy is way hotter than you.
The next day, Catherine tells her father about the visit and asks why he's kept her away from her family, because she's related to a bunch of these people. Mm-hmm. And he explains things, sort of, but she doesn't quite get why her father doesn't like Heathcliff.
Right, but that's not the issue. He says, you know, it's Mr. Heathcliff that dislikes me and is a most diabolical man, delighting to wrong and ruin those he hates if they give him the slightest opportunity. He's just at least trying to let her know who this guy is.
Right. So Edgar tells her you're not going to have any contact with Lynton, but she is her own person, and she starts writing letters to Lynton, and he writes back. So they're pen pals, and of course, this is all on the down low. Nellie discovers the letters, and she destroys them. Nellie sends a letter to Wuthering Heights telling Lytton to stop sending letters, still not saying squat to Edgar about the whole thing.
And this is actually the best scenario for Heathcliff, them being pushed away from each other once they've met. Yep. And maybe it was part of his machinations, because over correspondence, a person can really seem great.
Yeah.
And you can really start to feel strongly for them. You know, in person, she probably would have gotten sick of his boiled milk breath pretty quickly. But, you know, here on the page, absence makes the heart grow fonder, right? Right. I mean, the fact that they're sending these secret misses one back to the other, it adds a kind of a romantic nature to the whole correspondence. Yeah, and they can get to know each other's minds. And this is playing right into what Heathcliff wants.
Exactly. So chapter 22, Battle Cat is getting older. Edgar's health begins to fail. Nellie tries to pick up the slack, but she's not so hot at it. One day, Catherine is walking with Nellie in the garden, and there is a fruit that she wants over the wall. When she reaches to get it, she loses her hat. So she goes over the wall to get the hat, but she can't get back over the wall. So Nellie goes around to get the key. And when she comes back, Heathcliff
is
there.
Back there with her. But because the door's locked, she can't get in there.
Right. Going off on Little Cat for dissing Lynton. He's like, you know, you're horrible. He's this great guy. And you're just totally being mean to him and not writing him letters. And then he tells her that he's dying of a broken heart.
Ouch.
That she needs to come visit him. Kathmandu totally buys it and convinces Nellie to take her to Wuthering Heights the next day. Nellie agrees because she knows that Heathcliff isn't supposed to be there. And if Kitty sees Lynton is well, then it'll be obvious that Heathcliff was lying about the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And then he'll be a fraud, and then it'll hopefully end the affair. So chapter 23, Kat and Nellie go to see Lynton, and he whines a ton and then brings up them getting married. This guy's a player, you know?
Well, she's saying it's too bad you can't come over and live with us at the Grange like a brother, you know, because she's not quite. Because when she sees him in person, she gets it right away. Wait a minute.
Yep.
She's pretty smart. Yeah. And he says, well, you know, I'd rather that I was living there with you and you were my wife. Then if you were my wife, then you'd love me more than anything. You'd love me better than your dad. And she goes, no.
No.
She says, I should never love anybody better than Papa. And people hate their wives sometimes. Linton said, no way. People don't ever hate their wives. But Kathy affirmed they did, and in her wisdom instanced his own father's aversion to her aunt. Like, it's such a weird idea that he would think people never hate their wives.
Yeah.
Your dad kind of didn't like your mom very well.
Kat is done with this chump, and she shoves his chair, you know, because he's just giving her lip, and she's like, whatever. Of course, Linton, being the drama queen.
Oh, ow!
Ow! You pushed my chair! Oh,
ouch! You shoved it.
I'm dying now. Why did you attack me? Oh, my health is so bad, I'm going to die. And of course, because Kathy's a sap, and she's actually a nice person, she feels guilty about this, and she decides that she is gonna nurse him back to health.
Right.
Crazy town.
She somehow, even though he's not related to her, he somehow inherited the elder Catherine's ability to whine. This is exactly how she was, and I didn't want to spend any more time with this guy.
On the way back in the rain, Nellie gets sick, so Catherine has to take care of her and her father, by the way, because he's getting sick as well.
Well, he probably caught what his sister had.
She sneaks off at night to take care of Linton in secret. Yeah. So she's taking care of three people, and one of those people lives miles away from the other people. She's practically a saint.
She's burning the candle at both ends.
So chapter 24, Nellie's getting better, notices little Kat's sketchy behavior, and finds out that she's been off seeing Linton. Kat tells her about seeing Hareton and that he could read his family name at Wuthering Heights, but he couldn't read the date. So he's teaching himself. He's putting some effort into this. So Catherine, unfortunately, doesn't encourage him. After he does this, and like, oh wow, he figured that out. That's really great. You know, you just need to work on it more. She just calls him a dummy. And it's like, what? You don't know the date? You're stupid. And then he gets mad, of course.
Right. He's making an effort to better himself so that she'll like him. She had insulted him for not being able to read before, so he went and worked at it. But he didn't know numbers, and so she kept making fun of him. And that was a good point for Ellen to school her, and Ellen is correct.
He did not learn merely to show off. You had made him ashamed of his ignorance before, I have no doubt. And he wished to remedy it and please you. To sneer at his imperfect attempt was very bad breeding. Had you been brought up in his circumstances, would you be less rude? He was as quick and as intelligent a child as ever you were, and I'm hurt that he should be despised now because that base Heathcliff has treated him so unjustly.
And they use his illiteracy as a representation of that is something that can only be nurtured. But because he's illiterate, it doesn't make him ignorant. It doesn't make him not smart. It doesn't make him not a good person. He's got a good nature.
Exactly. When she's visiting Linton, Hareton comes in and picks on Linton to the point that he leaves and goes upstairs. So Linton is able to, like, you know, peel himself off the sofa. Because he's that getting that upset at being made fun of, you know, and goes upstairs. But Hareton, after he does that, he feels bad. And then he tries to apologize to Kat, but she obviously is really ticked at him. And then she leaves. So when she comes back to Wuthering Heights to see Linton, he blames her for Hareton being mean to him.
Right.
So she's like, what? You know, I stuck up for you. And she's, you know what? Forget you. I'm done. And then she leaves. But she comes back 2 days later and she's going to finally lay it down. She's not going to see him anymore. Linton begs for forgiveness. This is all little Kat telling Nellie this stuff, by the way, because Nellie didn't witness any of it. This is her just relating this stuff. Nellie's telling Kat's story to Lockwood, who's telling us.
Right.
So we're, you know, it's a deep dive here. Nellie tells Edgar, of course, what's been going on, and he's ticked and forbids her to go to Wuthering Heights anymore, but that Linton, if he wants, can come visit the Grange.
Right.
Probably because he's such a little sicky boy, he knows that'll never happen. Chapter 25. Now, back to Nellie and Lockwood. She tells him that this stuff all happened very recently, like a little over a year ago.
It's always nice when a story actually catches up with itself. You've been learning a lot of backstory, and it's the point where things begin to end. So, of course, I was also very excited about that.
Yeah.
This is all going to be over soon. They've caught up with the plot.
She tells Lockwood she doesn't talk like this normally to strangers, but she thinks Lockwood might be into little Kat himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, yeah, you know what? She's pretty good looking.
Yeah.
But that it wouldn't work out. You know, he's not going to stay around here forever, and he doesn't think that she's going to want to be away from Yorkshire, and that this is her home, this is where she knows.
Right.
But whatever, he wants to hear more of the story. So little Catherine does as her father wishes, but of course Linton never comes to visit. He's super sickly and can't really make the journey, so Edgar, seemingly on crazy pills, says if marrying Linton would make her happy, he would allow it.
Uh-huh.
Even though he knows full well Heathcliff would inherit the Grange. Edgar keeps getting more and more ill, and so does Lynn. Edgar allows Kat to meet Lynn on the moors, not knowing that Lynn is as sick as he is.
Right, and this all goes back to Edgar's stupid plan to never let her meet anybody else, because he's about to die now. He wants her married, of course, but there's really only one person that she can marry based on the restrictions of the world that he's built. So it's I can understand why he says it's okay, because it's his fault.
Yeah.
And then this gets us into chapter 26.
So Kat and Ellie go to the moors to meet him, but he's a no-show. They find him much closer to Wuthering Heights.
It's a little trickery.
And he's not doing well. He says that he's getting better, but he's not. He keeps looking over his shoulder to the house as they talk. Linton and Kat agree to meet again on the following day. On the way back, both Nellie and Kat can't shut up about how bad Linton is looking. Like, they're like, man, that guy is really looking rough. He is not long for this world. They want to scrap the marriage plans because they're like, why marry that guy? He's going to be dead tomorrow.
Right.
Finally getting caught up to the present time in the story almost. These last chapters that we've just had here really set us up with this new generation that is ultimately going to make human beings come out of this family, you know, because everybody was so rotten and vile. This new generation, they're a lot more sympathetic. I still don't like them, but they're more sympathetic comparatively to the other generation of people. Little Cat's being pretty nice, almost too nice, and Harrington is, you know, he's not so bad. Linton, on the other hand, is just pathetic on all levels. And he's going to die. It's kind of the end of that weak branch is dying out. So Little Cat making fun of Harrington sort of parallels Big Cat making fun of Heathcliff when she got back from being Grangerfied. She got fancy at the Grange. She came back and then she made fun of Heathcliff, which is almost exactly what. So there's these parallels that keep popping up in the story. But this time they're both nicer people. Harrington feels remorse when he's mean to stuff. And Catherine also apologizes, which the old Catherine never would do anything like that in a million years. And Heathcliff is now the oppressor. Like we were saying before, he's taking Hindley's role of what was done to him, and he's doing it to Harrington. These chapters just kind of really show also that Heathcliff is super patient with his revenge.
Again, he's that vampire type character.
Yeah. When you said that, going over these notes, it really stood out to me that he's this really manipulative vampire-like type
character. He can wait for generations to see his plan to fruition.
So Heathcliff really seems to have no love for his son at all and only thinks of him as a tool, which is horrible.
Yeah, everybody's a pawn to him. I mean, when you find him at the beginning of the book, he's there living with the daughter of the love of his life and the nephew of the love of his life. So you would think that would dispose him towards them, and yet he hates them even worse because of it. He's such a twisted up guy. And when we come back to the story, he's going to start executing on his plan finally. Yeah. So we're getting to the climax of this novel.
You know, we were talking about the adaptations of it. I didn't watch the Tom Hardy one. I just sort of skimmed it because it's on YouTube. The whole second half of the book is crammed in the last 10 to 15 minutes of the movie.
I can understand that. It would be really strange in the middle of a film to just cut to a second set of characters. I mean, you could do it. It'd be difficult. I think there was another one where they had, it was Juliette Binoche. They had the same actress playing both Catherines, so that might be helpful.
Was that the one with Ralph Fiennes?
Yes, I think so. I just wish that somebody had done a Pride and Prejudice and Zombies versions of this story. Just throw something in there. There's some evil bat that lives up in the house. Or
make him a vampire, man. Just make Heathcliff a vampire and turn it around a bit.
Yeah. Well, maybe Ken Hyde will do that. It'll be Wuthering Heights.
Wow. Is that just off the top of your head, or did you have that in your pocket?
I just off the top of my head. Wow. That could be the version we've all, the unredacted Wuthering Heights we've all been waiting for.
Well, I think it's good for us to wrap this up here, and we will finish up the entire novel in this final episode of Wuthering Heights. I want to thank our reader, Rachel Lackey. We didn't give her too much to read this one, but what little she did with style.
She knocked it out cruelly.
And that's all we've got. I'm Chris Lackey.
And I'm Chad Pfeiffer. You've been listening to the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast
at hppodcraft.com.
hppodcraft.com.